Hello, my name is Nagla Pillay and a very warm welcome to today's show entitled Fireside Chats. Today we look at the core of spirituality and how do we reach the state of spiritual and philosophical integrity. We look at how spirituality impacts on our lives and how to use spirituality in such a way that we lead more successful lives. We also look at today's show on our relationship with God, how we engage with God on a personal level, and how we do things like not just know and understand God intellectually, but know Him, live with Him, communicate with Him, and take the best that God has to offer. I'd like to introduce you to Sister Denise, who has been practicing Raj Yoga meditation for 40 years, and today she will share with us her ideas on the interesting subject of free will and predestination. Mr. Denise, a very, very warm welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. Free will and predestination is a subject that's been of interest to young and old alike for many centuries. There are those who believe that there is no such thing as free will, everything is predetermined. And there are those who think that from the time you were born, your life is cast in a world stone, whether you realize it or not. Where do you stand on this issue? And I'd like to know, how does that impact on your spiritual life?
The knowledge of the Brahma Kumaris takes up this in a very specific way. And it's not really a matter of either or. Most people think it has to be either there's free will or there's predestination. But in fact, it's a paradox, and we have to work with the two together, like walking along left foot, right foot. There are moments where you're very clear that you have no choice. Things are out of your hands and there's nothing you can do. To such a situation, it is appropriate to consider that as a matter of predestination. Then there are other moments where it's really the ball is in your court and you are required to act, and it's as if you're being tested on how you will act in that particular situation. There you have to consider that it's your free will being called upon, and you have to do the right thing, right time, and it's as if we're being assessed on that.
How does one reach a stage where you realize that the impact of what you're about to do is yours alone? What I notice is that many people make decisions based on what other people have to say. I'm not talking about children, I'm referring to adults who seek other people's counsel before making a decision. How does one gauge whether you make decisions by yourself or whether you seek external help?
Well, you have to consider many factors, and whatever decision you make, you're responsible for it. But if you make a decision without taking into consideration the impact that it will have on other people, then that would probably be an unwise decision. So it's really all about acquiring wisdom and using the different aspects, different attributes of spiritual information, so that the decision you make, obviously you must take responsibility. I made this decision. Sometimes people say, well, you told me to do this and therefore I did it. But that is not an excuse. If you're told to do something and you realize that that's not a good idea, you will be expected to do what is a good idea. And if you are really tuned in to what is good, what will have the best outcome, you get a good grade. You know, I'm very much keen on this idea of we're constantly under continuous assessment.
Well, Okay. So, Sister Denise, what happens in a situation where someone is compelled to do something for cultural reasons? Say, for example, you're born into a culture where you have to take a particular course of study because your grandfather and your father also chose that line of work, and so you have to follow in their footsteps, but that's not your own choice. And so there you are at odds. I'm using that as a professional example. There are also people who are told who to marry. There are people who are told whose behavior is determined by their birth rather than their own choice. How does one create a balance here by, you know, respecting the society in which you were born into, but yet also making a decision that's best for you?
There are many things you have to consider. If you're born into a society that has a lot of power over you and prescribes your life for you, you have some areas where there's choice and some areas where there isn't choice. If you go against the power that wants you to go in a particular way, you have to calculate the cost, because there will be quite a substantial cost, and you have to see whether it's worth it, you see. So all of these things are very calculated decisions. As far as possible, I would always advocate being true to oneself. And I think also what happens in the practice of Raj Yoga is you learn to develop a lot of powers. We call them powers through yoga, and this is really helpful, because then you're able to have enough power to do that which is not your choice, but which is better for you to do, because if you don't, it costs you too much, it's not worth it. And at the same time, you're able to pursue your own choice. And if you can manage, you know, both of these things, then you really have the best of both worlds. And the more you have your spiritual strength, the more you have your personal equilibrium, the easier it is for you to manage with the expectations of society, and at the same time to follow your dreams, to be really true to yourself.
So, yes, we have people who will be listening to this show who don't trust their own powers of judgment. And if one is born into a society where you're not even allowed to make a decision, where you're not given the opportunity to trust your own instincts, what do you have to say to people like that, who feel disenfranchised, disempowered because of their status?
I think that if a person feels strongly that they are disenfranchised, that means they are thinking, and they are capable of making decisions even though they're not able to carry it out. And in that respect, they have their own integrity, and they are in a way struggling against the stronger force of the surrounding society. And I mean, there are examples of people who have done this. I'm thinking in particular of Malala, who very famously has you know, paid a very heavy price for going against the wishes that were imposed, but at the same time, an unusual person, a very strong personality. I think eventually it comes down to understanding oneself. You know, if I know that I'm a strong personality, I'm a powerful soul, and I'm sufficiently intelligent and capable, and maybe have support people who allow me to actually pursue that, then that's a very fortunate position. So we have to gauge all of these things. On the other hand, if I realize that I'm weak, and then I have to go along with that, then I'm constantly having to betray myself. That is a very unfortunate situation. So I would always prefer to, you know, be the powerful soul, maybe not in a powerful position, because if you are in your power, you will find circumstances will eventually go your way. And I think that is part of, you know, through life, over the long period of time, pursuing a course of integrity, that power will come into your hands.
Tell us more about betraying oneself. That's an interesting expression, very thought-provoking expression.
You see, we can have moral cowardice, and that is where you betray yourself. You will have moral cowardice because you are afraid of public opinion, or you are afraid of being physically hurt. A lot of people will be affected, very adversely affected by verbal abuse. And a verbal abuse, I think, is something that, especially through the power of meditation, you can develop a state where verbal abuse has no impact on you. And if you can do that, then that gives you a great deal of freedom. When people are giving you physical abuse, beating you and things like that, there you have to decide how much physical damage you is worth it to sustain. But generally speaking, what I've experienced is if you're in your power, it actually deters people from striking you. But there you have to be in your peace and in your power. The moment you start to have any violence in yourself, it kind of excuses somebody from violating you. But I think if you're in your power, but really not in any kind of reactiveness or violence, which is a very spiritually powerful state, this makes it very difficult for people to strike you.
So what you're saying is that your consciousness, your own, what is going on inside you, affects how people treat you?
Yes.
A lot of people don't know that.
No.
Because a lot of people choose to be victims. Or when in a position of a victim, do not realize that they can come out of it and not and stay victims.
Well, sometimes it's going on from birth or even before birth. You know, one is set up for that, especially the females are set up for it. And so, again, the moment you get that you don't have to go along with being a victim, there you can start to really be in your freedom. And then you aren't under influence, you see. I think this is also where a connection with God is useful, because when people have a belief in God, a connection with God, that's a different influence, which is actually very powerful in comparison with the influence of a human being who's out of control. You see, a human being who's out of control is weak. And when you see that this person may be violent, but they're violent because they're weak, not because they're strong, your consciousness is going to be much different from one who is in victim consciousness. So the trick is to for a person to get it that being a victim is a choice.
When it comes to free will, why is it that so few people realize that the consequences of their actions are theirs and theirs alone? Why is it that we so easily play what is now called the blame game? Okay, you made me do this is a commonly heard statement in a home, in a business environment, at a school.
Well, partly is because it's so common that people hear that message and they think it's the way it is. So, you know, when a person is a little bit introverted, introspective, and they think for themselves, then it becomes possible to be more self-responsible. Mm-hmm. I think also the way we're educated, the media, very little messages reach people saying, you know, you are responsible for what happens to you. And I think that if that message were to go out, it would make people substantially more powerful. So it may be that there are people who really don't want that message to go out. And then the message of spirituality does want that message to go out.
You are responsible for what happens to you. That's I think that is the main aspect that we take out of today's show. That's extremely powerful. And it's unfortunately so little known.
I mean, part of it is because people don't spend time reviewing their activities. You know, one of the things we learn in Raj Yoga is at the end of the day, take a look, replay your videotape of the day and see how did you perform. Because when you do that, you can observe areas where you performed out of weakness. And looking back at that, it gives you the opportunity to be more alert and see, okay, I have this weakness, let me not fall into that trap on subsequent occasions. So this observation of the self is really very beneficial, because then you can see more clearly that, yeah, I am responsible. And when you start fine-tuning these things, really fine-tuning it, your conscience starts waking up and actually alerting it. Hey, you're making an excuse. This is inexcusable. You know, it'll start giving you these little messages inside. And if you really want to be a person of integrity and a person of independence, you will really listen to that, and actually this is where the personal work takes you forward.
Mm. So Denise, the world is filled with people who have a don't care attitude in respect of themselves. That statement that you made, you are responsible for the decisions that you make and who you are, the truth of that resonates very deeply with almost everyone watching this show. But there's a shockingly large percent of the population that simply don't care about the consequences of their action, have zero interest in introspecting. You know, it is common knowledge in almost every country in the world. It is illegal to consume a certain amount of alcohol and get in behind a vehicle. It happens daily, globally. Okay? That's an adult choice and an adult decision, and not caring about the consequences. You can harm yourself and harm others. What causes people to not care about themselves in such a blatant way?
It's addiction, you see. If you are addicted to a substance, alcohol is a very addictive substance, then it's also called a disease of the will. So your will is not available for you to actually prevent you from doing that which is harmful to yourself and others. And so this is the problem of addiction, and addiction is extraordinarily widespread. And this is why a person is unable to get past it. And the reason for addiction is because they're unable to manage their emotions. You see, when you become emotionally distressed or disturbed, you will use and abuse a substance or perform an activity to manage your emotion. And this activity is harmful for you in terms of its consequences, but you will do it anyway because you can't handle your emotions. And why can't you handle your emotions is because you are spiritually weak. And the society today defines people who are weak as people who are bad. And I would say that we need to really put a little attention on personal weakness, because you can strengthen that. You can't make a bad person good, especially not by using violence, but you can say, okay, your negative action is because you're spiritually weak. And so, you know, there's a few things you can do to reinforce your spirit.
Well, how do you bring God into that picture? Or what you just said? In the context of today's topic, how do you enlist the assistance of the divine to make decisions that work for you and against you, your negative traits and your dark side notwithstanding?
Well, you see, when you bring in the question of God at the same time as the question of predestination, you come onto a different, in a way, a different philosophical level, because the concept of predestination is known to the being of God. So, if you want to be connected with God in the context of predestination and use your willpower, there's a very refined state of consciousness. And so how to bring that in? First of all, you have to, I think, accept or recognize that you are substantially weaker in every way when there is no connection with God. Secondly, you can't have a connection with God if you're not interested in God. Mm-hmm. You can't have a connection with God if you don't know anything about God. You can't have a connection with God if you don't discriminate between all the various different descriptions of God, which may or may not suit you. I mean, who would believe a description of God that doesn't suit them? But then they have to say, okay, this description of God doesn't suit me. Is this the only description there is? It gets quite deep, quite complex. So I think if a person feels, I need to have the divine in my life, without the divine my life doesn't have the substance and the importance that it could have, the meaningfulness that it could have, then they need to really seek out a truth, you know.
Sure. So, Denise, this is, when I hear you speak about God, it's not just a theory. It seems to be experiential. Okay? How do you make God into an experience for many, many people? God is somebody you go to when you're in trouble. God is somebody you go to when you're desperate. God is almost like a thing, an idea, a person, personality somewhere up there who you go to when you've tried all other, you know, when all else fails, knock on God's door. So you speak of God differently. Take us through that.
Well, it is true that people go to God when everything else has failed. So it means in that case that God, or the idea of God, the being of God, is not very real for most people. And the society we live in is based in materialism, and it's definitely a world where a lot of people really seriously feel there isn't anything like God as a being. Some people think that there is a kind of universal force which maybe they would call God, and but that's very impersonal. It's all very vague for a lot of people. There are some people who, in my terminology, they don't have the God chip. It's like you either have it or you don't. And if you don't have it...
That's quite funny, the God chip.
Well, it's one way of putting it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you don't have it, then perhaps it is extremely deeply buried and you won't make contact with that until your situation gets so desperate that you remove all of the coverings or veils between you and it. You know, I am convinced that every soul on earth at some point in eternity has an encounter with God, which implies that there has to be some kind of a memory, some kind of an experience of God somewhere, but very, very deeply buried for many people, and for other people who have always, you know, maintained a relationship with that discarnate divine being, they have very easy access, and I think every soul is different in that respect.
Sure. So, if one has to make a small or a big decision, and you want to invite God in your decision-making process, how do you go about doing it? You know, there's this expression that goes, do everything as much as you can, and when you can do no more, then hand it over to God.
Well, that's a very good idea.
Do you do that?
What I do is I have a conversation with God ongoing that becomes quite specific when it comes to my interest in doing things that are significant, that are worthwhile. You know, the idea that I live by is that if you want to have meaning in your life, then your life has to have something to do with the task of God. And then the task of God, in my view, is to make this world a better place, to make this world a perfect place. And then how is that done? That's another subject. But to try to be involved in such a process gives, I think, to me anyway, a great deal of meaning. Because to me, if you're living in a superficial way, only in a hedonistic way, or just for very superficial purposes, there's not enough of a reason to live for me. Life is sacred, but what makes it sacred?
Sister Denise, how do you know what God's task is?
Well, I think that God is famous for creating paradise on earth, and obviously it's not paradise on earth here and now because there is human suffering. So I think the question of human suffering comes into it, and it's not possible for humanity to relieve itself of its own suffering, because it's too weak. So God is also known as the Almighty, one who has power. What kind of power? What does that power do? How does it operate? It seems to me one of the things that it can do is to remove human suffering. This is a very, very deep subject, but to me that's a very important function of God. God is also called, you know, the purifier, the one who destroys evil, all of this. But you see, when you take the word destroy, and you know, the judge, all this, then it makes God look like some fearsome character who's going to be punishing all these people for all their weaknesses. But that seems to me a very human approach. Anthropomorphization of God means that you kind of reduce God to a mere human behavior and then extrapolate from that, which is not a very good way to arrive at perception of God. You have to be able to go past those things, but of course very few people can do that.
Sister Denise, thank you very much for what you shared today. Unfortunately, it's the end of today's show. What I find particularly interesting in today's talk is when you shared that people are responsible. I, as a human being, am responsible for my actions. And it's so tragic that so few people know that and comprehend that and apply it in their daily lives. So thank you very much for sharing that message. And thank you also for sharing how one could bring God into that picture. Thank you so much. So, audience, I hope you have taken as much as possible from the wisdom that Sister Denise has shared, and I hope that you will be able to apply it in your life and improve the quality of your life as a result. Thank you for joining us today, and we hope to see you soon. Thank you, and goodbye.